very much appreciate the privilege that we have of being in God's house to worship His name. I'd like for a few moments this evening to take the next piece of armor that Paul talks about in Ephesians chapter 6. Last Sunday night, we tried to talk about the preparation of the gospel of peace that is what goes on our feet. And in the very next verse of Ephesians 6, Paul says this. He says, "Above all, taking the shield of faith, wherewith ye shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked." As we mentioned last Sunday night, faith and salvation, or hope of salvation, and things of that nature follow in order after gospel preparation. And as we mentioned at the very beginning of this series, the very first thing to put on is truth that girds our loins. But here in the middle of this whole thing, he says, above all, taking the shield of faith. Now, I mentioned last Sunday night that faith and salvation and how we understand those things is greatly dependent on how well prepared we are by the gospel. There are some things about faith and salvation that I really don't expect people outside the church to know. And the reason I don't expect them to know that is because they've never been instructed in that. The gospel has never prepared them in those things. I don't expect to talk to somebody in the world, and when I mention things like predestination and sanctification and justification, I don't expect somebody in the world to really know what all that means. And most of the time they don't. And a lot of times the more you talk to them, the more they really don't understand. But if I talk to somebody in the church, I really expect them to know what predestination means. I remember a story Elder Luke Addison told one time. He'd been preaching and pastoring a church for about 3 years. And he was just getting to the point where he thought, well, maybe some of my efforts are really starting to take root. Maybe some points are really starting to hit home. And there was a funeral of one of the members there at the church. And on his way out of the cemetery, one of their oldest members, she was about 90 or 91 years old, and she did not have Alzheimer's. She was very lucid and she was very alert. Her mind was as sharp as it ever had been, but her physical condition was greatly weakened, and she was on a walker. And she was standing there at the gate of the cemetery consoling one of the family members whose loved one had just passed away. And Brother Luke thought, well, I'll stop and listen to this grandmother in Israel console somebody who's lost their loved one. And as he stood there eavesdropping, he heard the sister say, "You don't have to worry about your brother. We know he's in heaven." And Brother Luke thought, well, here it comes. And she said, "Because we know he did more good works than bad, which is going to tip his scale in eternity." And about that time, Brother Luke thought, "Do they even know what I'm preaching about?" He said, "You know, that was something I expected from somebody in the world, but not something I expected from somebody in the church. The more prepared you are in the gospel, the better we ought to understand faith and salvation and the things that we have in this world." But why does it say, above all, taking the shield of faith? Why does Paul single this particular piece of armor out and say, above all? Because as a soldier in battle, there are a lot of things that we may not have exactly right. But if the shield is up, we're able to protect ourselves. You know, if a soldier does not have his loins girt about just right, or if he doesn't have his breastplate on just tight enough, or maybe if his helmet is kind of crooked on his head, if he gets behind his shield, he might still ward off those fiery darts of the wicked. But the best way to know how to wield the shield of faith is to have a clear sight of other things. But the shield of faith is something that Paul says above all to take, because it can shield us in a way that nothing else can. I was reading this past week, or maybe it was last week, about faith, and I heard someone quoting a very famous atheist who has just died. And this very famous atheist who just died said that faith is one of the most foolish things in the world, and the reason that it is because it's something that people hide behind the way children hide behind fairy tales in their imagination. Well, friends, he got one part of it right. Faith is something to hide behind. It's a shield that you hide behind to keep you from all the fiery darts of the wicked. But there's no shame in hiding behind your faith, friends, because when the final analysis comes right down to it, if you don't have faith, if you don't have trust and confidence in God, where are you going to go to find trust and confidence in this world? If I didn't have faith, I wouldn't have anything. If I didn't have trust and confidence and assurance in God, friends, I'd be a very miserable man in this old world. If I didn't have trust that Jesus Christ really has been resurrected from the dead, I would be of all men most miserable. But friends, because I have those things, I'm not really all that concerned with what happens in the good old US of A. It concerns me, friends, but I'm not all that concerned. It's not the end of the world for me. And friends, whether I live or whether I die, by faith I understand that we have a better home. We have a better country. By faith I understand that this existence that we have is not all there is to life. Friends, it's a wonderful comfort to know by faith that we're going to a place where joy shall never end. It's a wonderful knowledge to know that when this life is over, we're going to see our King in all of His glory. And friends, it's a wonderful thing to know that the troubles that we have in life, no matter how serious they seem to be at the time, they will not last forever. Friends, that's something that faith teaches us that we can have hope and confidence in. But He says, above all, taking the shield of faith, wherewith you shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. You know, Satan, he is going to launch a lot of attacks, but we ought to know where those attacks are coming from. One of the things that he is going to try to do is he's going to try to get us to doubt, to have reservations, to have a reason to question the things of God. He's been doing that ever since the Garden of Eden, and he's been doing that even to this very hour. He gives us a reason to question God. The way he gives us a reason to question God is because he questions what God says. And when he questions what God says, he asks us to question what God says. You know, whenever he approached Eve in the Garden of Eden, he didn't approach her with some of his own ideas. He approached her with what God said. He says, "Yea, hath God said, you shall eat of every tree of the garden." When he approached Christ in Matthew chapter 4, he didn't approach Christ with things that he was saying. He approached Christ with things that Christ said about himself. He says, "If thou be the Son of God." Why did he say that? Because Christ freely declared that he was the Son of God. And here's how he comes at you, friends. He's going to say, if you're really a child of God, and then he'll go on and talk about other things. He doesn't want to talk much about himself. He wants to talk about you and what you have and what you believe and where your confidence is. Whenever he comes calling, whenever he comes with his fiery darts, one of the things he's going to question is, he's going to say, there is no way that God could possibly love you. One of the things he's going to say is, there's no way that God would possibly want to help you. One of the things he's going to say is, there's no way, after all that you've done, that God could still possibly bring you to heaven. He's going to say, after all that you've done, as unfaithful as you've been, there's no way that God is going to have anything to do with you. And friends, there are times in our lives when we might be willing to believe that. There's times in our lives we might be willing to believe that we're really not one of His. I recall some preachers one time that Paul had to deal with. Some preachers who were told overthrew the faith of certain people. He says in 2 Timothy chapter 2, in verse 16 and 17 and 18, he talks about Hymenaeus and Philetus. And what does he say about them? He says, who concerning the truth have erred. And they claim that the resurrection is past already. And they have overthrown the faith of some. You know, if I came to you tonight and I preach to you that the resurrection has passed already, what in essence have I said in my preaching? You aren't children of God. The resurrection's come and gone, and you've been left out. Well, friends, if I was to preach to you that the resurrection was already passed and you believed it, what has Satan in essence done? He's gotten an advantage over us, and in the advantage that he has over us, our faith is overthrown, our shield is off to its side, and we believe what Satan has put in our mind, and we doubt that we really could be God's children. Have you ever had those days, like the Duchess of Huntington had, when she wrote the words to "When Thou My Righteous Judge Shalt Come"? She says, "What if my name should be left out when thou for them shalt call?" Friends, I've had those days when I wonder that, and the reason I have those days is because instead of my shield being up here protecting me to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked, my faith is overthrown. It's off to the side. It's hanging by my side, and the darts are hitting me one after another, and I fall victim to Satan's devices, and I cast off my confidence that I have in God. But friends, there is nothing wrong with what God has given to us. There's a lot wrong with how I use what God has given to us. Whenever I hear people talk about faith, one of the things that's always interesting to me is, of all Bible subjects, it's probably one of the most misunderstood. One of the reasons is because there's a lot of people who believe you can do something to get it, and you can't. Either God gives it to us or we don't have it. And second of all, a lot of people believe that, strange as it may seem, that faith is imperfect, that faith is somewhat lacking. Friends, there's nothing lacking in anything that God has given to us. There's nothing imperfect. There's nothing flawed in what God has given to us. What's imperfect about faith is not faith itself. It's what I do with the faith that God has given me. Whenever Christ rebukes those disciples on the sea in Mark chapter 5, whenever they come to the bottom of the ship and he's asleep and they say, "Master, carest thou not that we perish?" And he stands up and he goes up in there and stands on the deck of the ship and he says, "Peace, be still." And immediately there's a great calm. And they were all amazed and they said, "What manner of man is this that even the winds and the waves obey him?" In Christ, he could have commended them for having that wonder and marvel about what he had done. But instead he rebukes them. He says, "O ye of little faith, why didst thou doubt?" Now, why did he rebuke them and say, "O thou of little faith"? Had he given them less faith than he'd given somebody else? No, he's making a reference to what they're doing with what he has given them. Friends, here are people, here are some disciples who had been with Christ, who had walked with him and talked with him, heard him preach, heard him speak, and even seen him heal people. And whenever push comes to shove, whenever the chips are down, the winds and the waves are beating against the ship, they think all hope is lost. Why would they think all hope is lost? Their Master, their King, and their Redeemer is with them in the ship. Friends, in our lives, we should never think all hope is lost because our Master, our King, and our Redeemer is always with us in the ship. There's no reason to have little faith. There's no reason to think that everything is over. There's no reason to think that all hope is lost because He never leaves us or forsakes us. He's always with us. But yet, so many times, my faith is so little. So many times, my doubts are so big. And the reason is because I have not used what He's given unto me. He tells the disciples in another place, I believe in Matthew 15, He said, "If you had faith as a grain of mustard seed, you could say to this mountain, 'Be thou removed and cast yonder into the sea,' and it would be done unto you." Now, friends, I don't have any need to move a literal mountain. When it comes to a natural peak, whether it's Mount Everest or whatever, I have no need to have that removed. But friends, there's a lot of mountains that I have in my life, a lot of great problems in my mind, that if I have faith as a grain of mustard seed, it doesn't take a whole lot. But if I have confidence in God and who He says that He is and what He says that He has done and will do, those mountains can be taken and cast away. You know what worry and care and all the things of life that get us down, you know what those are? Those are mountains in our mind that we seem to think are insurmountable, that we just can't overcome. Well, friends, whenever I say I just can't overcome something, I'm basically charging God with being a liar. Because, friends, He has said that we can overcome the things in our life because He's given us the strength and He's given us the grace to overcome the trials of life. But one of the things that I find interesting, and I mentioned some of this at Pleasant Plains on Wednesday night, I believe, that whenever you look at situations in life, and I was talking about the story of Elisha healing the pottage in 2 Kings chapter 4. And in that story, there is a prophet who takes a bunch of wild gourds. He gathers a whole lap full of them. He shreds them up and he puts them in the pottage. Now, have any of you ever really seriously given thought and consideration to eating a gourd? If you have, please don't tell me about it. I don't want to know what your experience was like. But if any of you really thought and looked at the gourd and said, you know what, I think I'll try to eat that today. I don't really want to eat anything you make a birdhouse out of. No offense, but it's just not appealing to me. And if I was to ask you how many of you would like to go out there and take grass out of the yard and make a casserole out of it, how many of you would be interested in doing that? I mean, I'm not really interested in making a grass casserole, if you want to be honest about it. I'm not really interested in having gourd soup. But what would convince a man, what would possess a man to think, you know, I think I can eat this. I think I could have this for dinner. What possesses somebody to do that is it says in that story that there was a great dearth in the land. There was a famine. It was desperate and hard times. And in desperate and hard times, folks will do very irrational things. Folks will do things that had never done otherwise. You know, it's not really all that surprising to me why today so many people are interested in changing the church. Has that ever really made you wonder why so many people are interested in changing the church? It's not really hard to figure out. If the church was thriving numerically, if the church was thriving in a natural way, if the young people were interested and spirituality were high in this country, would there be any need to change what we're doing? Nobody would even consider it. But whenever you're having hard times, folks start thinking, oh, what are we going to do? We need to do something. Friends, whenever you think you just got to do something, stand still and wait on the Lord. Because it's always easier to stand still and know what you're supposed to do and move than to just do something and having to go back where you started and then figure out where you're supposed to go on the right path. If you don't know what to do, stand still and wait on the Lord. But desperate times will make you do things you'd never think about doing otherwise. But I'll tell you this, desperate times will bring out something more than anything else. Desperate times will make somebody's faith strong. It'll make somebody's faith more steadfast than it was before. One of the things that is also not surprising to me about today is how low spirituality is. And the reason that is because, friends, naturally, we're one of the most blessed generations that's ever lived, naturally. We have more naturally than probably any other generation has ever had. Well, friends, if natural things are up here, it's not all that hard to figure out that spiritual things are going to be down here for most people. But I'll tell you this, when natural things begin to go away, when the bank accounts start getting slim, whenever the food prices start going up, whenever depression and hard times come, natural things begin to go down. And people's faith becomes stronger and more dependent upon the Lord. Friends, our faith and our strength and dependence upon the Lord ought to always be there. But it gets stronger when times get tough sometimes. And the reason that is because hard times can bring out what is truly most dear unto us. One of the things that I find interesting about faith, and that is that faith in the Bible is always tied to action. It's never tied to necessarily what you say. It's generally tied to what you're doing. You know, there's a lot of people in this world who say a lot and do a little. There's other people in this world that say a little and do a lot. Christ asked some Pharisees a question one time in Matthew 22. No, it was in Matthew 21. He's having a very long dialogue with some Pharisees, and he mentions a story about a man who had two sons. And he tells the first one, he says, "Son, go into my field and labor today." And he says, "I go, sir." And then he didn't go. And then he went to his second son and says, "Go and labor today in my field." And he says, "I won't." And later he repented and went and labored in his father's field. He said, "Which of them twain did the will of his father?" And they said, "Well, the one that went." Well, friends, the answer about faith is not necessarily what we're talking about, although our speech is very important. It's what we're going. It's what our feet are doing. The boy who said he wouldn't go and later repented, he did the will of his father. The one who said, "Oh, I will," and then didn't go, he didn't do the will of his father. One of the things that faith is it's action motivated. And the things that our works do, the things that our works proclaim, show forth the faith that we have. James says in James 2 and 17, he says, "Faith without works is dead, being alone." The reason it's dead doesn't mean that it has no life. The reason it's dead is because it has no manifestation. A man may have faith. God may have given him faith and put it in regeneration. But if there aren't a lot of good works coming forth, it's dead, being alone. It doesn't profit much. It doesn't have a great manifestation. It's kind of like a man in a coma. If If a man's in a coma, laying there in a bed, unless you're watching really hard and you don't see him breathe, you might think he's dead. Well, friends, there are people in this world who have faith, but if there's not a lot of works coming out, there's not a lot of profit to the faith that they have. And James says, yeah, man may say, thou hast faith and I have works. He says, show me thy faith without thy works, and I'll show thee my faith by my works. He says, when push comes to shove, when times get tough and the chips get down, he says, my faith is going to be shown by the works that I perform. Now, how is it that we measure? How is it that we measure faith? Is it based on our opinion? Is it based on how we feel? Is it based on how things appear? Friends, be very careful about how things appear. You know, if you go based on appearance, you're going to be wrong a lot. I've gone based on appearance a lot, and I've been wrong a lot. Appearance is not the judge. Appearance is not the final court. When it comes to the analysis of faith, it comes to the work and the practice of it. You know, Paul says that faith is like a shield. There were some shields that Solomon made for the temple that he built for the Lord. You know, when Solomon built the temple for the Lord, probably the kingdom of Israel was at its highest point, naturally. It was the richest. It was at the most peace. It had the wisest king. God was manifestly in their presence. And to top it all off, they built a house for God that His smoke descends upon and He speaks through the cloud. And friends, on this glorious occasion, Solomon dedicates all these things in God's house. And one of the things that he dedicates is he has 300 targets or shields beaten out and placed in the house of God. 300 shields made of gold that he dedicates to the Lord and he puts them in God's house. They don't stay there long. The reason they don't stay there long is because in his wicked son's reign, named Rehoboam, after he's already lost almost all the kingdom, he gets invaded. And this is in 1 Kings 14, about verse 25. He gets invaded and Shishak, the king of Syria, comes in. And one of the things that Shishak does, he raids the house of God. And he takes some of those treasures out. One of the things that he takes are those 300 shields of gold. You know what Rehoboam does? He makes some shields in their place. 300 brazen shields. Shields of brass. You ever looked at brass and gold from a distance? From a distance, they look very similar. From a distance, the appearance of them is about the same. But they're very different in quality. They're very different in their properties. And friends, when it comes to our lives in this world, there are a lot of things that I might say I will do right now when things are good. When things are bad, I may not do. But friends, in the final analysis, it's not how I appear. It's not what you see me to say. My faith is not what you sense in me. Faith is what you see me do, how my works perform that which is done. If you pick up a brazen shield, it may look a lot like a golden shield, but friends, when the final analysis comes right down to it, when the battle gets hot, that shield will not be like a shield of gold. And friends, your faith and your confidence, you might say is in God. You might say, I hope and I trust in God. You may say, God is my refuge, and God is my king, and God is my shield, and my trust is in Him. But friends, when life comes calling, when the devil starts throwing his darts, if our confidence is really not in God, we're going to be very, very afflicted on that day. Because friends, confidence in God is not just saying I believe in Him. Having faith in God is not just saying I trust in Him. Having faith in God is saying if God has said this is the way it is, that's the way it's going to be. Friends, I don't care what the devil may say. I don't care what the devil may do, because in the final analysis, he loses. I don't care what this world may say about God. I don't care what this world may say about what God has done or will do, because in the end, the world burns up. But friends, one thing that faith stands upon are things that never end. Things that endure forever. Friends, our faith, our hope, and our confidence should not be in self. It should not be in the world. It should not be in anything that we see. Because friends, all that we see is perishing. It's vanishing away. But faith, true faith, the real faith that can ward off the devil, is the kind that says, no matter what my situation in life may be, God is still good. No matter what my physical condition may be, God is still good. No matter what hardships I might face, God is still good. Friends, when life gets tough, God is still good. When life beats you down, God is still good. When the dart hits you that says, God has forsaken you, God has not forsaken you. And friends, when the world says, it's just foolish. It's just foolish to go to church. It's foolish to read your Bible. It's foolish to have spiritual ideas. Friends, those things are never foolish. And the reason they're not is because, as I've said so many times before, if you don't have trust in God, if you don't have the Bible as your standard, where are you going to go to find one? Friends, I know of nothing else in this world that makes as much sense as the Bible does. I don't know a place in this world where things seem so much better than in the house of God. I don't know a people in this world that are any better than you, the people of God. Yes, we have our problems, but friends, I'll take your problems over the problems I see in the world. I guarantee you. You may say, well, Pastor, you hadn't heard all my situation yet. Believe me, people in the world talk more than you do. I don't want their problems. I don't want to deal with them. Had a fellow at work ask me this week. He said, have you ever counseled people dealing with this, this, and this? And I said, no. He said, what would you say? I said, I have no idea. And I'm going to start praying that I never have to counsel somebody having those kind of problems. But friends, I'll tell you, there's things going on in the world right now that are just absolutely mind-blowing. But I'll tell you this. Everything you see in the world does not change the fact that God is on His throne. It doesn't change the fact that God is good. And here's one of the things that will show us just how well we're holding our shield of faith. It's above all, taking the shield of faith, wherewith you shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. You know, sometimes those wicked darts come in before I know they've come in. How about you? Sometimes one will hit me, and it'll be a little bit before I realize I've been hit. And all of a sudden, I'll find myself in a place, and I'll think, how in the world did I get here? And if I go back and think about it, I can figure out when it was that I got hit. When I saw something I shouldn't have seen, or heard something I shouldn't have heard, or maybe I did something I shouldn't have done, and I didn't realize at the time where that was going to take me. But one of the ways that you know whether you're trying to hold the shield that God has given you, a shield of faith made of gold, or whether it is that you're holding a shield that maybe you've put in its place, one that looks very similar, but has a lot of your own ideas thrown in, the way that you know which one you're holding is that when things get tough, do you still do the things you want to do, or do the things that God has told us to do? Friends, there's days when I really don't want to preach. You may say, there's days we don't really want to hear you. That's fine. I remember the story Brother Gary told. He may have told it here, but I've heard him tell it several times. But the man who, on Sunday morning, he just didn't want to get out of bed. And his wife said, honey, you got to get out of bed. You got to go to church. He said, but I don't want to go. She said, you got to. You're the preacher. Well, friends, even the preacher has days like that. But there's days sometimes that I don't feel like doing what I know I should. There's days that I feel like, well, maybe I could just take a break for a little while. Friends, those are thinking, those are ideas of myself. Those are things that I have put in. You'll never find a time in your life where serving God is out of season. You'll never find a time in your life when following after Him and what He has said is the wrong thing to do. Nor will you ever find a time in your life, no matter what He asks you to do, where what He has asked you to do is too hard. John tells us His commandments are not grievous. That means they're not overburdensome. They're not impossible to perform. What He's asked us to do, He always gives us the ability to perform. Whenever you're holding a counterfeit shield, a lot of times your mouth will say one thing and your feet will do something very different. Have you ever heard somebody talk about how much they love the Lord. To talk about how much the church means to them. To talk about how important it is in their life. And yet they never seem to read their Bible. They don't come to church as often as maybe they could. Whenever things are hard in life, they start wondering where God is. That whenever they have a bad day, whenever they have a bad month, whenever they have a bad year, their steps go in a very different direction than what their mouth has said. Friends, I've been there. I remember telling people for a long time how much the Bible meant to me. And all the time, I was sitting at home on my desk gathering dust. I remember telling people how important the church was to me. And all the time when I came to church, I was just there in body. My mind was somewhere else. Whenever I had hard times in life, what I said sounded so very different than what a Christian should say. That I would ask, where has God gone? That I would ask, what's going to happen? Friends, there was a time in my life when, although I didn't know it, I thought appearance-wise, I was putting on a pretty good front. And then one day, when my house of cards came crashing down, whenever I picked up the Bible and blew the dust off of it, whenever I didn't go to church and daydream, whenever my steps started following what my mouth had been saying for a long time, I had people in the church come up to me and say, "We're glad to have you back." Friends, how did they know? How did they know that even though I was there in church, how did they know that even though I talked about good things, how did they know? How did they know that I wasn't really there? Because they saw the steps. The steps didn't match what my mouth was saying. As Brother Stephen prayed in his prayer, faith is something we walk by. And friends, we walk by faith and not by sight. Whenever I was in that rough period, I was taking everything that I could see and walking after it. Faith is not something you walk after what you see. It's walking after something you don't see. And even though you don't see it, it doesn't mean it's not there. I had somebody ask me week before last about faith. He says, "How in the world can you tell me that you have assurance and confidence and something you have never seen?" And I asked him a simple question. I said, "Have you ever been to Russia?" He said, "Well, of course I haven't." I said, "How do you know it's there?" He said, "Well, because I just know it's there." I said, "How do you know it's there?" He said, "Well, I mean, there's people that are living there now." I said, "Have you ever talked to any of them?" He says, "Well, no." "Have you ever seen one on TV?" He said, "Yes." "Have you ever talked to somebody who's been there?" He said, "Once." I said, "Then you believe that Russia exists based on the evidence from other people." We believe in God based on the evidence of the Bible. We believe in God. We have faith in God and what He has said based on the testimony of His people through His Son in His Word. Friends, faith is not blind. Faith is not stupid. Faith is something we all have to one degree or another about a lot of different things. And I'll tell you this, no charge for this. I realize I've been up here way too long, but I got a lot further to go tonight than you do. But I'll tell you this, if someone ever tells you that faith is foolish and creation is stupid, you tell them this: well, it takes faith to believe in creation. It takes faith to believe in God. But it takes a whole lot of other faith of a very different kind to believe in something called evolution. It takes a whole lot of confidence, a whole lot of trust in something that's just about impossible, that I'll say is impossible, to believe all this that we see just happened. Friends, I'll tell you this. faith and confidence and trust that you have in Christ, the things that He has told us and the things that He's promised us, they'll never, ever come to naught. It's worth walking on. It's worth following after. Faith is not something that's good enough just to die by. It's good enough to live by. Because I'll tell you this, friends, when the world is on fire, these things will stand. When God has put down all rule, all authority, and all power, these things will stand. And even in our dark moments, and even in our hardest times, these things still stand. And they're worth following after. If these things have been a blessing, give Him all the praise, honor, and glory. And the Lord should bless you, is my prayer.